Radio.
Part 2 of Who is Man for Woman and Who is Woman for Man? A presentation by Father Thomas Lawyer during the Theology of the Body retreat held at the Mount Schoenstatt Retreat Center in Malgoa.
Oh, glory to Jesus Christ. Glory to Him forever. Okay, well, back to my question, ladies, of your resounding affirmation, I'm a man, right? Because something spoke to you, and what spoke to you was my body. And the question we left off with was, what language do our bodies speak? So I got another question for you. What's that? Okay. What's that? Another circle. Am I boring you? What's that? Okay. So I won't bore you. What I'll do is I could keep putting circles up here, but I'm going to connect them together. You tell me what this is starting to look like. What are you starting to see?
Woman.
Woman. Okay, woman. Very good. Okay. All right. Now, what I did was, and I could have kept going, but what I did was, you notice I started from a point A, I came back to point A. I just kept repeating that. And I put them all together. And it started to make a little motif of womanhood. Now, in the very physiology of woman, is a design of repeated concentricities, concentrating like something circular. And throughout her entire physiology, which has this basic motif of concentricity, there is a language in that. There's a language to anything physical. Anything is designed a certain way. Like, you know, for example, you know, what does this say? What's it say? What? Cup, right, okay. And it's designed such a way as to what?
Contain,
exactly. Because you know how it is designed. By your experience of that design, you will know that this says to you, don't use me as a hammer, even though I might be able to pound a nail in the wall with a cup, if it's strong enough. It wouldn't make it a hammer, right? Don't use it to sit on, even though if it's big enough, you might be able to sit on it, right? It would say to you, it works best if you fill it with some liquid, right? Like tea, right? Or coffee. And it's telling you that, right? I don't have to tell you that. You don't have to learn that. Your experience of it, your observation, your vision of it, as it speaks to you, your experience of it, would eventually tell you what it is for, what it is about. And everything else then comes from that. How you treat it, how you store it. Everything you do with it, everything you can't do with it would have to be consistent with what it says that it is. So, if woman is designed around a series of concentricities, what does that say? What language does that speak? Very good. Yeah, it speaks a language of bringing things together, right? A language of connectedness. A language of integration, a language that brings things together relationally. If we have a body that speaks that kind of language, and we're made in the image and likeness of God, then the very language and theology of a woman's body is speaking already something about God's immanence, God's presence, God's relationality, God's connectedness. In every way, the whole physiology of womanhood is designed for connectedness. Do you realize that we have two hemispheres in our brain, right? Well, guys, you know that women have more connector neurons between the two hemispheres of their brains than we do? Did you know that, ladies? Your brains are actually more connected than ours. Yes, and that enables you then to do things better than we can, such as focus on more people at one time, multitask better than we can, shop better than we can. Do anything that has to do with bringing a lot of things together at once. You can do a lot of things, ladies. You can do a whole bunch of things at one time. Men are not quite that way. We'll get to them in a minute. In every way, your entire being is constructed along this theme of connecting, of bringing the world together, of accommodating the environment, pointing to a God who is close, tender, loving, and relational. You speak in the very design of your body, what it communicates, its language, you speak about a God who is immanent, close, loving, and relational. Do you remember when Jesus looked at Jerusalem? Remember he cried? What did he say? Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I long to take you to my breast like a mother hen takes her chicks, but you would not let me. In that analogy, Jesus Christ speaks with the tenderness, although he being a male, speaks with the tenderness, the relationality of womanhood. You make present this aspect of God, his tenderness, his relationality. Remember I said last night that with womanhood, with Eve, ushered in the order of what two L words? Love and life. Remember, love and life. In these ways, we begin to now perceive not only how God is manifested through the language of our bodies, because remember, we're made in the image and likeness of God, which means we have to make him present through our entire being, our very physicality. It means also that we gather insights into ourselves as woman and as man. What is this? Now watch the magic pointer, the magic marker. I'm going to start here. I'm going to move outward. You got that? I'm going to start here. I'm going to move outward. You got that? Now I'm going to connect it. What did I make? A triangle. Okay. All right. What I'm going to do is, I won't bore you too much, is I'm going to start to put in more triangular shapes. I'm just going to repeat the theme of triangles. Angular shapes. I use triangles in this case. What am I starting to make? What's that? What is it? I couldn't hear you. All right. Now, I know every guy is thinking you're just one workout away from this, right? Now, if you notice what I did, I started from one point. I did not come back around, as I do over here. I started from one point and worked outward. Started from one point and worked outward. And I just kept doing that and connecting them together. So now you have a different language, a different physiology. A physiology that does not bring things together, but rather a physiology that acts upon the environment, that moves outward from itself. Notice it was a movement outward. This was a movement back inward, back to the center. This one went out, this one went together. If one represents and manifests in its language, its theology, a God who is relational, connectedness, integrated, tender, the other manifests in its very language a God who is also at the same time other, out there, powerful, awesome. So we see that God, who is both out there, transcendent, and immanent at the same time, makes himself manifest in that way precisely by the fact that we're made male and female. He stamps his very character into the differences that we are as man and woman, spoken in the very language and theology of our bodies. Now, in every way, the male acts outward, acts upon the environment. When I was on the plane over here, on the way over, I was watching. You see this all the time. So there's a little boy. What do little boys do when you give them something? What's that? Right. They try to take them apart. They challenge them. They bang them. They throw it. Men work on a kind of a verticality. You see this even little boys. I want to know who's in charge. Who's the strongest? Who's the top dog? This boy had these little toys they were giving on the plane to keep him occupied. He's a little toddler. And he kept banging them. banging him, smashing him, banging him. And finally, the woman, the mother, gently took it away, and he started banging the wall. See? So he wanted to act upon things, break, throw, test. Give little girls the same things, the same toys, and they will react with them differently, won't they? Yes, they'll bring them together. In fact, they did studies. They did studies where they had these toys. These studies have been done since the 1950s, and they always come out the same. They give stuff to girls, and they give stuff to boys. This is before they can be socially indoctrinated, and they see how they interact with them. Boys will take the same objects and put them in a kind of a, they'll kind of pile them up and then knock them down. And girls will take them and put them into circles, into rounded shapes, and put them things inside there. They react in a way that's consistent with their whole physiology. See, our sexuality and the language that it speaks is replete through our entire being. This is what our world doesn't understand, what thinks it can compartmentalize and change all that. Our sexuality and how it manifests God is manifested through our entire being. And it's consistent. So, men act upon the environment. They like to see the point of things. They like to see who's in charge. Are they stronger than this? What is it made of? Woman, on the other hand, is going to be more geared towards relationality, towards connectedness. Remember I said that Adam came first? Why did Adam come first and then Eve? Why do you think? Based on everything we've said so far, think of the language of the body, the theology of the body. Woman brought into the world, ushered into the world, what was it? Life and love, right? Okay, life and love needed a structure in which to be protected, in which to thrive. So God sets up the whole plan, puts man, Adam, the man, in charge of protecting the structure. So that within that structure, you know, the Garden of Eden, the order of creation, life and love could thrive. So the woman brings into the order of creation life and love. The man protects that structure so that it can thrive. Now when they fell down on the job, Adam fell down on the job, God comes to Adam and asks him, where were you? He didn't come to Eve, he comes to Adam. Where were you? You were to have protected the order of creation. Most particularly, you have protected the woman. Let's do a little experiment here. I'm going to bring this, this table over here. And I want one of the ladies to come up here. And I want you to, I brought a baby. I want you to come and hand me the baby. Anyone want to try? You're a mother. You're going to hand me the baby, okay? Say a baby's going to be baptized or something. You're going to hand me the baby. Okay, you're a mother, right?
Yep.
Okay. So hand me the baby as you would hand the baby to. Okay. Hey, stop. Freeze. You notice that? Okay, sit down. Very good. All right. How about one of the guys come up, hand me the baby? You're already laughing.
I'm going to do it how everyone's expecting.
Good. Very good. And that's right. And that's why when I have baptisms and it's a little baby, I'm always hoping it's either the godmother or the mother holding the baby and passing it to me. Because if it's the guy, it's a little different story. Yes. Now, how did he do that? It's not a setup job. Did it? You notice the woman naturally brought the child close. I'm going to show you another something else. You can do this in your seats. Hold your arms straight out, all of you. So hold your arms straight out, your fist to the ceiling like this. When you put your arms straight out, one of the main differences between men and women is that guys' arms have, from the shoulder to the wrist, have a straighter axis. Notice that the girls, when they put their arms straight out, there's a bow or a bend in the elbow. You see that? You see? These two differences alone, among many differences, enables the girls to be able to do what guys can't do. God made us guys so we can't very easily pat ourselves on the back. But actually, a woman is designed to bring things to make this kind of action. Why would that be? Why would that be? You saw with the baby, right? It's kind of obvious. Why would God design woman so that she more easily can make this motion? It's all through entire physiology to bring things together. Relationally, tenderly, in an integrated way. What would be one of the reasons for that? What's that? Motherhood, very good. Okay, one of the many reasons, right. Now, another contest here. Try this. Face me. Put your palms against my palm. Now what you're going to do is you're going to try and shove me into him. Okay? Go ahead. You can start. Okay, very good. Your turn. Shove me into her. Okay, who won? He was holding back. Okay, the guys always win this one. Why? Because we're not oriented to this. We're oriented to moving outward. The axis of the arms, the broader shoulders, bring the motion forward with greater strength this way than with a woman. Woman's agility would be to bring things together, the man to move outward. The immanence of God and his transcendence. Okay, thank you very much. Okay. Manifested in our very bodies is not only God who is transcendent and immanent, you know, the awesome God, the one who's out there, the one who's far beyond us, but yet also the God who is close, loving, and tender. But these little languages of the body speak also about the man and woman themselves, respectively. They tell us about how they're hardwired, what they need, and what they don't need. Let's see if you can come up with it. If a woman is basically oriented in her whole physiology, the basic energy and thrust of her being is relational and connected, what might be her greatest needs? Her greatest legitimate needs as a woman?
Love.
Love, okay. And love, and why would you say love? In the physiology of the woman, inside of her body, deep inside, in the middle, she has an open space, which is called a what? The womb, yes. St. John Paul II said, putting on his theology body glasses, looking at the physiology of womanhood, listening to what it's saying, he says, you know what that says? It says that womanhood alone has a special genius. And that genius is her gift of receptivity. Like we said about the cup, remember? The cup is programmed, it says receive. The woman is programmed to receive, to take in, to be filled. So her greatest desire would be to be, as you're saying, relationally fulfilled. Everything about her can be looked at in terms of the order of love, fulfillment, and relationship. Conversely, her greatest fear is going to be what? What's that? Yeah, well, yes, that unfulfilled. Yes, to be unfulfilled, to be distant. She wants things and people to be close. Now, if she desires that, she desires to be fulfilled, she desires that connectedness, what then, in contrast or in complement, might the man need? Okay, give. If he's programmed to act outward, to act upon the environment, to accomplish, to tear down, to see the point of things, to invent, to penetrate, to throw. Everyone knows how everything is a projectile, guys. Love to throw things, kick things, bang things, spit, you know. That's a way to understand guys very easily, ladies, is one word, externality. Where are our defining parts? Internally or externally? External, yes. And they act externally, don't they? We act in a kind of a phallic energy, right? What does that mean? It means we act by moving outward towards something, outward towards a beloved, outward towards the environment. In fact, you know that when they do, again, these experiments on the children to see how they're different, male and female, boys can focus on things further away than girls, and they're a little more single focus. The girls tend to focus on things closer in proximity, but they could focus on things in a more connected way. Going back to the baby, that experiments, when they had the baby in the crib, little electrodes hooked up to the brain to see how the brain waves would act, mother would walk into the room. Just walk in the room, wouldn't do anything. Baby would sense mom's in the room. Baby's brain waves are very placid. Dad walked in the room, brainwaves are like this. Because the baby knows that when mom picks the baby up, mom does so like this, right? Safe, loving, calm, tender. When dad picks the baby up, what does daddy do? Hey, boy, how you doing? That's my boy. Look at that. That's my son. It's like, you know, it's like the kid doesn't know whether, you know. What's happening by the very touch of the mom and of the dad is another experience of God. Of a God who is close, loving, and tender, but a God who is also awesome and who will challenge our faith. Can you trust daddy? Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. What's daddy going to do? Can you trust me now? Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, I trust. Okay, can you trust me now? Oh, no. It's exactly what God the Father does to us, which is why having a mother and a father is so essential to the psycho-spiritual development of a child. Because the child receives two realities, two messages, which are part of the incarnation of God, but also are very critical to his that child's formation as a human person, and eventually as a person of faith. That God and life, as the Father will teach the child, has a harder side to it, a more challenging side, a more frightening side. In fact, when baby gets hurt and cries, by instinct, fathers will hesitate. They will hesitate before they actually go to the aid of the child. Just long enough. Why would the father do that? Why does the father do it instinctively? Exactly. The father, by nature, again, being more angular, being more outward, acting upon the environment, going back to Adam, dealing with the structure of things, the exterior world, is teaching the child to develop their own strength to face the external world. That's an instinctive reaction by the father. They've done studies on this. Dad will look, again, baby's hurt, crying. Dad looks, okay, what? Oh, it's okay, come on, get up, come on, you know. The mother will react much quicker in instinct to go to comfort the child. What is the child receiving? What messages is the child receiving? That life can be hard, and you have to develop your own strengths and face what is out there. At the same time, there is a place and a God who is loving, close, and tender that you can go to for comfort. The experience of God, the experience of faith. God has revealed to us through the very fact that we are man and woman. If the greatest desire, legitimate need of womanhood is to be relationally fulfilled, and her greatest fear is unfulfillment, what does that say or communicate to the man in her life, to the husband? And I do this all the time in marriage counseling and also marriage preparation. Because 9 out of 9 couples miss this. See, there's no such thing as a marriage problem. There's no such thing as a marriage problem. It's another thing we're debunking here. There is only a problem of Susie not knowing why Joe is a man. The real why. And understand the language of his body, which should clue her into his needs as a man. And also his greatest fear. And conversely, Joe doesn't know the real why that his wife is a woman. And therefore what her legitimate needs are and what her fears are. And so what happens is couples will relate to each other on the level of their fears. So they're missing each other. They're hurting each other. What the theology of the body does, and it does this so effectively, is it teaches a couple how to see each other, read the language of their bodies, and come to the understanding of what their real needs are and how to meet those needs instead of plugging into each other's fears. What is a man's greatest fear? We'll go back to what is his greatest need then, based on our demonstrations. What's his greatest need going to be? Need it. Very good. Yes. Another little tip, ladies, about men. Males do not become men naturally. They remain males, but don't become men naturally. They don't become men on their own. Where did I say the body parts are? Externally? Okay, think external. See, it's all in the language of the body. You just got to decode it. You have all the secrets. If there is a fundamental externality to the male psyche, the male orientation, it means he's going to need things from outside of him to become a man. That thing he's going to need more than anything else is a message that must come from his father first, then from the male world he grows up in, and then from his beloved. And that message is, you are needed. You're the guy for the job. You have what it takes. Good job. Now you can walk with the men. Do you remember when Jesus Christ, before he went on his mission, he was baptized? And what happened when he was baptized? His father's voice boomed out of the heavens and said, what? Yes, this is my beloved son, in whom I am well pleased. And then Christ went on his mission. When a man does not hear this, a boy, a male does not hear this message from his father first, it can cripple him for life from becoming a real man. Yes, affirmation. Yes, the affirmation of adequacy.
That's a bit different from saying you're pleased or you're proud. Affirmation can happen on a regular basis. But being once off, pleased or proud is different from that. So.
Yeah, it's an affirmation has to do with a sense of accomplishment, that you were the guy that got the job done. See, men respond to being called to a sense of mission. Do you remember Isaiah? God said, who will speak for me? And he said, well, I will. I was counseling a couple some time ago, and as always, it works this way. The woman calls, not the man, right? Father, we have marriage problems. Can we come in and talk to you? Can I come in and talk with you? I always say, no, I need both of you to come in. It won't work if you just come in. It'll make it worse. What? No, Father, you won't. What do you think her next line is? Right, he won't come. Right, he won't come in. Can I just talk to you, Father? No, you got to drag him in here. You got to get him in. I only talk to both of you. So she comes in. They sit down, say, what can I do for you? And she starts, because as a woman, when women are out of sorts, they like to relate and talk. Man is the last thing we want to do. We go in our man cave. We get quiet. We don't want to talk. Men go into solitude when they want to regenerate. Women go into relationship. They'll talk. So she starts to talk, and he's sitting there. Man, she's telling me all the things that are wrong with him. Well, as we're talking and going through the session, little by little, I saw that I had to start changing the tables on her a bit. That the real problem was this. She was missing his legitimate need as a man, and plugging into his worst fear, which was inadequacy. When a man hears inadequacy, he steps back. He retreats, which makes the woman even more angry because she wants relationship. She wants connectedness. So she beats on him even more, at least in this case. He's retreating even more. What I was trying to do is get her to understand this, as I do with many couples. It's a principle of reciprocity that John Paul II talked about in Theology of the Body. He said, you have to help meet each other's needs. You have to help each other meet each other's needs. She's telling me basically what he's not doing for her. And I said, okay, that's objectively right. But I told her, from what I'm hearing, you have to do something and stop doing something that will release him from the shackles. You have him in shackles now. You have him in psycho spiritual shackles, and therefore he can't meet your need. He needs to meet your need. I admit that. He's not meeting it. But you have to help him meet it. Well, she got all flustered. She stormed out of the counseling because I was supposed to fix him up. She brought him there so the priest would fix him up and then everything would be fine. Well, I tried to explain to her, but she wasn't getting it. 2 weeks later, she calls me. She's a new woman. She said, "Father, I understand it now. I understand everything you were trying to say. And I changed my approach to my husband, and everything is wonderful." She came across somebody on the internet, or whatever, that said the same thing I did, and somehow that clicked for her, and I didn't. So, but it's okay, as long as she got it. And she was completely a different person. She understood. She apologized. "Oh, Father, now I know exactly what you were trying to say. And I was so stupid. I couldn't see this. I know. I understand it." But she heard this other one on the internet, and it all came together for her. And she said to me, "I understand it now. If I want something from my husband, I have to approach him with a sense of mission." I said, "You got it. Now you're thinking theology of the body, because stand the language of his body is the desire to act upon things, to get the job done, to accomplish things. Therefore, when a man is asked or approached like, 'I got something here and you're the guy for the job,' you're the guy. The guy is like, 'Yeah, I am the guy. Yeah, I'm the guy.' And then when he accomplishes it, man, he's 10 feet tall. And he's 20 feet tall when the guy who asked him for the mission said, 'Good job, you did it. I knew you were the guy.'" Ladies, you approach men that way, they'll do anything for you. Anything. Believe me. To this day, that husband, in that case, he's doing anything for her. And they're happily ever after. One time I talked with a man. He told me one day, he says, "Father, you know, I'm working two jobs. I got a business and I have a job. The business is going out of business. And I'm trying to hang on to the other job. And I'm working 10 hours a day to hang on to that job. And it's hard. I come home and my wife just complains that I'm gone too much. I'm not being with the boys enough. It's this and that and this and that. And this goes on every day." He said, "Finally, one day, I went up to her. I put my arm around her and I pressed her to my side. And I said, 'Honey, if you would do this to me for 1 minute every day, I'll do anything for you. Anything. Anything. Just for 1 minute, tell me I'm worthwhile. I'm your knight in shining armor. And I'll do anything for you.'" Now, she didn't know that about him. She didn't read the theology of his body. So what was she doing? Plugging into his worst fear. "You're not measuring up. You're not adequate. You're not what you should be." And where does a guy go? Into the cave. Now, when it comes to the woman, I have to oftentimes explain to the women, to the men. They're sitting there, and the woman's talking. He's not. He's mad as hell for being here. Guys hate, they hate coming to the priest for counseling, because it's like when they were kids, dragged before the principal at school, you know, the bad kid, you know, and they figure the priest is already on the girl's side, the woman's side, because they've already been talking, because she can talk, and the priest listens. So he's just at a total disadvantage. He hates it. So I have to tell him, "Okay, now look, do you hear what she's saying? It's not about the words, it's about the message. Listen to what she is saying under the words." And sometimes I have to get to the point where I say to the couple, okay, stop. I want you to sum up, you've been talking here for a half hour. I want you to turn to your husband, and I ask the husband the same thing, husband, turn to your wife, and I want you to tell each other the one thing that you would want to say to each other. 9 times out of 9, it has to do with them expressing to one another, you're not seeing my need. You're not picking up on it. And a lot of the anger and the fighting is they're communicating, but in a disordered way, that desire to have their need met. And neither one is picking up on it. So it becomes just a fight and a connecting at the level of their fears. And so they hurt each other. They hurt and they hurt and they hurt. Then they get divorced. And all that was unnecessary. It's all unnecessary. It is always about understanding each other as man and woman and what your needs are and how to meet those needs, how to help each other meet those needs. It's very reciprocal. I have to tell couples all the time, you want him or her to do this for you. It's okay. But they can't. They got shackles on. You hold the key to that shackle. Unlock those shackles, and then that other person can try to meet your needs. It's entirely reciprocal. And all they had to do all along was read the language of their bodies as man and woman, how it gives them insights into how they're hardwired, what they're going to need as man and woman, and what their fear is going to be. I have to tell the men, don't you hear what she's saying? What does she want from you? She wants to be more connected to you. You're not talking with her. You're not spending time with her. You're not being present to her. I know maybe you don't want to hear what she has to say, you think it's silly, whatever, but she wants your presence. She wants connectedness, not distance. And this is one of the things that is so devastating about pornography today, that when the men are into pornography, it disconnects that woman in a way that is unlike anything else. And the men don't get it. They just don't get it. And I have to tell them, do you understand what she's going through? She feels totally isolated, totally out there, alone, so distant from you, while you're into this fantasy. She can't get to it. If you were having an affair with another woman, she can go at least go after that woman and pull her hair out or something. What can she do with a fantasy in your mind? All she can do is stand outside, while you give to a fantasy what she alone deserves. Can you imagine what she feels? You could imagine, if you understood the language and theology of her feminine body. There's another, there's two. This, the first one is the language of the body, understanding that in each other. And the second thing is a guarantee to happy marriage that the couples miss on is another concept from the theology of the body. In the Song of Songs, it says, my sister, my bride, you've ravished my heart, my sister, my bride. Now, why would the Bible speak in the same breath about someone being a sister and a bride? Is it promoting incest? But this is profound, and it is essential to a happy marriage. Why would the scripture say that? You've ravished my heart, my sister, my bride. And how would that be essential? What do you think?
Respect.
Okay, you're on the right track. Before a husband and wife become a husband and wife, what are they? Did they meet as husband and wife? Did they drop out of the sky as husband and wife? No, they become husband and wife, right? Which means they were something first. What was that something first?
Friends,
yes. And if they're people of faith, they would understand that they were brother and sister in the Lord. Correct? Okay. a brother and sister in the Lord first and forever. The key for the fighting couple is to ask them this, which is what I do. How would a brother in the Lord treat a sister in the Lord? And vice versa. Forget that you're married, your husband and wife. It's like two planes, two levels. There's a level, you're married, and we talk about theology of the body. Now I'm going to put another plane in front of that. That plane now is the plane of brother and sister in the Lord. How does our brother and sister in the Lord treat one another? What I want you to do is after you describe it to me for 1 week, no matter how much what you feel, no matter what's going on between you, I want you to, even if you just go through the motions of being brother and sister in the Lord to each other, just for 1 week. Then come back, we'll talk about how the week went. How do you think it would go? You have ravished my heart, my sister, my bride. We are always, always on these two planes, brother and sister first and always. Then spouse. As long as the couple remembers that, when they're having difficulties on the other plane, there's at least hope if they can treat each other as brother and sister in the Lord. Even if you don't feel like it, doesn't matter what you feel. You know, the lotteries in America, the way they'll know that I won the lottery is they drive down highways in America with big billboards, and it says on the billboards, "To hell with your feelings, because your feelings are sending us all to hell." Then you know Father Tom Loya won the lottery. But that's what I would do with the money. The reason I would do that, because of big heresy in our culture, that our feelings equal reality, that you act as you feel. You do not act as you feel. You act according to what is right. And the feelings can be worked out after that. Regardless of what they feel, you act as brother and sister in the Lord. And the rest of it will have a much greater hope of being healed and worked out.
That was Father Thomas Loya with part two of Who is Man for Woman and Who is Woman for Man. This presentation was part of the Theology of the Body retreat held at the Mount Schoenstatt Retreat Center in Mongoa, and which was organized by the Family and Life Office from the Diocese of Parramatta. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit creatio.org.au.